Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Off the ball. This is News Talk.
Hello there, now you're very welcome back. So as we've been discussing already on the show, James McLean has received public support from the FAI, from the PFA over in England after, well, not for the first time really, highlighting the anti-Irish abuse which has and continues to go in his direction. It's vile stuff, as you can imagine. It's Irish this, it's IRA that, it's we'll burn down your house and everyone in it. It's been bullets in the post. The last two being lines which McLean say cross a line. You won't be surprised to hear. The point he makes and has been making, he made a similar point about a year ago, you might remember, when he was hearing lots of talk of discrimination, and he went on to Talk Sport and said, why is the abuse that I'm getting not deemed as serious? And he reiterated that point yesterday. He said the anti-Irish abuse he receives is alive and well and prevalent in his world, and worse, it's deemed less serious than other forms of discrimination. Why is it not being talked about? Why is it allowed to continue without punishment? We all thought that was very interesting. So to tease it out, the lived experience of Irish people over in England, maybe. I'm very happy to say we're joined by Enda Brady from Sky News and from and also Ardal O'Hanlon, a comedian and actor. Ardal, I was about to say from England as well, but have you moved back recently? You're very welcome, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Joe. And how are you? I lived in England sort of from 1994 to about 2006, and I've sort of come and gone ever since. So I'm in Dublin now, all of this.
Well, listen, we can get into the McLean situation, which, you know, has some, if not quite unique things, but certainly the Poppy situation and just the mad world of football abuse and fandom is kind of swirling around there as well. But parking that for a second, your own experience when you go over, Ardal, as a, 28-year-old in 1994, territory, how did you find that initial experience, London in the 90s?
Well, I think there was a sea change probably around that time in attitudes towards the Irish in Britain. Being Irish was sort of cool then. There was a thaw in the relationship. The Troubles were sort of, by the mid-90s, you know, they weren't in the news every single day. I remember, particularly in terms of Irish culture, like Irish comedians, there was a sort of a wave who went over around the same time as I did. People like Dylan Moore and Sean Hughes have been there for a couple of years already. Shortly afterwards, people like Darrow Breen and Jason Byrne would have gone over. You had shows like Father Ted, you had shows like Ballykiss Angel, you had music as diverse as the U2, Cranberries, Boyzone, The Cars. People loved Ireland and the Irish. And I remember distinctly reading an article about how 25% of British people in some survey declared that they had some Irish ancestry. So it was really, really cool to be Irish. Mm. And that slightly changed at the time of the Canary Wharf bombing.
Okay. And could you feel that change? You noticed that change?
Well, my experience as an Irish person in Britain was like, it was incredibly positive, as most Irish people's is. Mm. Irish people were excelling in all walks of life by then, in sport, in culture, in TV, in the city. Irish people were just doing great and were really welcome with open arms. Mm. And so I had never experienced any incidents of racism, of anti-Irish racism, until after the Canary Wharf bombing. We were actually recording an episode of Father Ted the night of the bomb.
Which was, jog people's memory, this was about 1996.
So about 1996, yeah. So we would have been recording an episode in the London studios, which is in the South Bank of London. And the audience there were kind of not really aware of it or it certainly wasn't. It was something we were just made aware of shortly before we went on to record. So it was like, you know, there was a kind of an immediately you got that kind of edgy feeling, which you would have had you know, on occasions in the past when there was a kind of a high profile incident like that. But it wasn't until the next night that I was doing my own stand-up show in a notorious club called Up the Creek in Southeast London. It was in Deptford. And it was one of those legendary places, like if you survive that, you know, you're never going to struggle again. And I remember, but I used to quite like the club, and you know, because if they liked you, they really liked you. And I remember going on, and I just more or less opened my mouth when this table at the very front starts shouting at me. I'm like really roaring, very aggressive at me, calling me an Irish, you know, C word, and saying, "Is that Semtex you've got in your pocket?" and stuff like this. Like they were just heaping abuse on me. And I remember like my reaction wasn't like to run off the stage or anything. I got really angry because, you know, like Irish people in my generation were quite confident. We didn't cower. Like we, you know, we would love to engage with people on these kind of issues, but we didn't feel that we personally had to apologize for these outrages. But I remember the thing that I remember most and that gratified me like enormously was that the rest of the audience rallied around me, and they more or less like ushered that table out the door, you know? So that was incredible. And, you know, any misgivings I might've had or, you know, about being Irish in Britain, like were kind of dispelled that day, you know?
Mm. So it's a minority, of course.
Yeah, I mean, in my experience, it's a minority. Yeah, I mean, you know, it like the reason I remember those incidents so well is because they were quite rare, you know? So they do kind of stick out, like, and you know, they were very jarring at the time. Now, you kind of, I suppose, like, Canary Wharf was pretty pretty outrageous incident. You know, you kind of would be, you'd be extra wary for the next couple of weeks anyway, you know? And so I suppose it wasn't entirely unexpected. So, you know, I mean, standing out in any stage at the best of times, you're going to be on your toes, you know? But especially after an incident like that, like you'd kind of come armed.
Yes, that's an extreme moment, I suppose. Enda Brady of Sky News. How you doing, Enda? Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good, Joe. Yeah, hello, Ireland. Good to speak to you both.
Hi, Enda. How are you?
When did you go over, Enda?
So I did the Leaving Cert in 93, and I was 17 and a half, and I didn't get the points to get into DCU, basically. I wanted to be a reporter. I wanted to be a journalist. I didn't get the points. And I went to Preston, to the University of Central Lancashire, and my parents dropped me off, and I'd never really been in England or Lancashire or anywhere in England. You know, I'd no experience of what it was going to be like. I made some friends. I joined the football team at the university, and you just immerse yourself in life. And I've loved every minute. I mean, I'm 45 now, and I would say, again, like Ardal said, the overwhelmingly positive experiences I've had here. Mm. I've been welcomed virtually everywhere I've ever been. And I think it's a great country. You meet some amazing people. And yes, occasionally the odd little incident pops up that upsets you or whatever. But I just think it probably could have happened to me in Ireland, or it could have happened to me anywhere, Australia, America, New Zealand, Canada. But it's, as always, it's just the tiny, tiny minority who upset it for everyone and generate an awful lot of noise and headlines, like what has happened for James McLean and his family. And I've spoken to people today who are friends of his, fellow footballers from the Ireland team, and they're all very, very upset and concerned for him.
Mm. And unfortunately, it only takes a tiny, tiny minority in social media to be quite loud, Enda. That's the point here, really, isn't it?
Well, I think social media is the problem here. I think we've come to a stage now where these companies, and they're making colossal cash, they need to address the issue and root out the abusers and come up with a system, and it's not that difficult, where if you join Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, that there needs to be some sort of identity document, or where you work. You know, the days of joining places and having an egg as your profile picture and calling yourself Diego Maradona 86 and then abusing every footballer under the sun, I mean, those days need to stop, because it's off the scale. And looking at what James McLean and his family, and I think his wife Erin wrote a very moving and eloquent piece that she put out on social media last night about being spat at, having nights out ruined, people threatening to burn down the family home with her and her children and her husband in it, and one guy saying that he was going to go to James McLean's game with a gun. Mm. I mean, deeply distressing stuff. But again, you know, I've covered court cases as a reporter where people have been on trial accused of trolling and sending the most vitriolic, hateful, hurtful stuff to people. And when you actually go into a courtroom, and the case I'm talking about, they were found guilty. When you see these people, the perpetrators, they're some of the saddest individuals you could ever imagine looking at. I mean, they have nothing in their lives. They're full of hate. And these platforms give them an outlet to spew their spleen.
When you went over, Ardle, I guess you must have been, I know you were in your late 20s, you would have been aware of like the grand tradition of Irish need not apply and all that stuff. But I mean, straight away, you got Newcomer of the Year, you won awards, you were welcomed, Father Ted happens. So, I mean, it's kind of a magic thing. I was texting a friend earlier who's moved over in the last while, and I was kind of saying, look, we're bringing on Ardal O'Hanlon and Enda Brady, and it's to do with the McLean thing, and I'm not sure, you know, how it all fits together. They're all very different experiences. And I was just saying, you know, do you feel anti-Irishness over there? Like, is that a thing? And he was saying, no. He was saying, no, I feel we, you know, loved. But he said, it's funny. He was saying last year there was just, I don't know what had happened. Maybe there was some dealing with somebody, and very quickly the guy called him a dumb paddy. You know, so it was sort of there. But he was saying, look, it was like a reflexive thing. It's almost in the ether a little bit, but it wasn't like a considered opinion either. So what's your experience of that whole sphere?
Yeah, you know, even your best of friends, you know, the most well-educated, fun people to be around will occasionally be slightly patronizing or worse, you know, maybe make an ill-advised kind of reference to potatoes or something. You know, look, it's, I don't know, you know, they have a very different education than we have. You know, in this country, we have a very different version of history, and they don't know our version of their history. And, you know, maybe we shouldn't expect too much from them, you know. Like, even the very best educated of them, the higher echelons of the Tory party. I mean, if you remember, under, I think it was the Theresa May government, the Secretary of State of Northern Ireland cheerfully confessed to not knowing that people voted along sectarian lines. You know, this was the person that they deemed best qualified to be the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
And she didn't know the first thing about the demographics in that part of the world. I mean, it's really phenomenal. So they don't really know their own history. The kids in school in England, they're taught about how Britain abolished the slave trade. They're not taught about the previous 200 years, the carnage and horror of being a leading player in the slave trade. You know, so they don't know much about the destructiveness of empire. And they know all about the glory of empire. And going back to James McLean for a second, I mean, can I just say, like, obviously echo Enda and like how reprehensible all that stuff is. You know, he's a lovely man, as you know, a very intelligent and articulate person, and very brave, you know, that he would take on the issue of the poppy to an audience who simply don't want to know. I mean, what people in this country possibly don't fully appreciate is how attached the English are to their own military service at every level of society. I mean, you know, it's hugely important. You visit a cathedral, you know, the first thing you notice are the war memorials. You go to any village or town, you'll see a war memorial. Most families would have an intimate relationship with the British armed forces. So, you know, they have a very different experience of all of that than we have. So, you know, and sort of circling back a little bit to your question, I think definitely since Brexit in the last 3 or 4 years, you wouldn't notice increased anti-Irish sentiment, really. But, you know, that genie is out of the bottle, clearly. And I suppose people have just been given a little more license to, I don't know, articulate some of these kind of old atavistic notions, you know. And it's slightly annoying. Like, I mean, I used to get it over the years. You get the odd little bit of sort of like a kind of a barbed joke about, you know, oh, you're coming over here taking our jobs. But, you know, you kind of expect all that. And as an Irish person in Britain, you know, your instinct is to fit in, and your instinct is to be, you know, is to keep your head down and not like, you know, keep your head down is the wrong word. I mean, obviously, if you're a reporter on Sky News or a comedian, you don't exactly keep your head down. But you're very respectful of their norms and their history and their conventions and the way they want to do things. And so you'd be reluctant to, to lecture them about how stupid or wrong they are about certain issues. Do you know what I mean? And I found that on stage over the last couple of years, like doing stand-up, you know, where, you know, the audience are so great and they're so supportive. But as soon as you kind of touch on those kind of sensitive Brexity kind of issues, that just don't like it, you know?
Yeah. You've said so many things that I want to pick up on. There's loads in that answer. For instance, on the idea of settling in and going along with the flow, we had the referee on the show last week, Dermot Gallagher, or Gallagher, I guess, as he is over there. You know, he's Premier League for maybe 20 odd years. And he came on the show. It just struck me halfway through the interview. His accent seemed a bit more Irish than I was trying to remember. How does he sound on UK television? And then after the interview, and I asked him about it, and he said, oh, look, you know, I get slagged because when I talk to my family or my Irish friends, they all say I sound like an Irishman, but obviously I'm a bit different over in the UK. And you play him on UK TV versus the interview last week, and the difference is stark. And he was also even saying, Ardal, that, you know, the producers would say to him, here, listen, just watch the accent a bit here, Dermot, will you? Like, there's a H in Thursday. It's not Thursday. It's Thursday. And Dermot was like watching the BBC News to try and affect his accent. But it ties in with that point you make about there's an instinctive quality there whereby you try and fit in. Because loads of people texted in saying, oh, geez, my dad was a bit of that as well, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's incumbent upon you to do that, though. I mean, to some extent, in the same way as you'd expect people to come to Ireland, like to kind of go along with our little notions about ourselves, you know? You know, and the other, sorry, just going back to one little tiny thing about the type of abuse that James is getting at the moment. You know, like before Twitter and social media, you're only going back 5 or 10 years, like I would have got the odd bit of hate mail, you know, a letter like threatening to kill me or whatever, or something, just somebody sharing some anti-Irish material, like basically explaining, you know, what bog trotters we are, and sort of the photocopy loads of pages from different, you know, fringe publications, and you know just like, and they put it all together in a big collage. So they had to go to a fair bit of trouble to do that. Mm. You know, they needed a photocopier, they needed an envelope, they needed a stamp, they needed to find the address of my agent. You know, they had to go to a certain amount of trouble. So they were the trolls 10 years ago. And so you only got a certain amount of it, you know, if you had any sort of a profile as an outsider in England. Whereas now, obviously with social media, you know, those trolls are enabled in a hugely different way.
I've got to say, I'm amazed that you would attract death threats. Like, you're not the most offensive character I've ever come across. What is that about?
Well, look, I got one from Achill Island once as well.
Okay, so, well, they're a different breed as well.
Yeah, no, to be honest with you, but like, you see, we're highlighting these incidents, and
sure,
they are so rare, yeah, you know. Yeah, yeah. And I think with James, like James's circumstance, everyone's circumstances are slightly different. You know, James explained better than anyone why an Irish person may not choose to wear the poppy. But it's just one of those symbols that just gets their backs up as much as anyone else.
I'll come back to poppy in a second. And on the accent, as a broadcaster over there on Sky, have you had to shape? Were you asked, listen, Enda, can you tone down those dulcet Irish tones a touch?
No, I mean, I sound exactly... I'm from County Wexford, I'm from Enniscorthy, and I spent childhood summers with my grandmother and grandfather in outside Newcastle in County Wicklow. So that's the kind of accent I have. It's not really a Wexford accent, but it came from childhood summers in Wicklow. And no one over here has ever said to me to tone down my accent or change it. I mean, there are times when I'm reading a script and, you know, if I've written the script, I write a certain way and I write with the flow of my voice and I know what I want to say. But if someone has written a script for me, maybe I'll go through it and take out a few words that I don't like the look of. But no one has ever said, tone down your Irish accent. I mean, all you ever hear is nice compliments, because I think, you know, two little islands, you look at the map of the world, we're two little islands right beside each other. And people rub along nicely most of the time. I honestly think, you know, the majority of right-minded people. I even had an elderly man come up to me in the street in Ealing yesterday in West London, and he was smiling his head off. And I said, you're happy today. And he said to me, two reasons. He was an Asian man, about 70. He said, I got my jab today. And he said, and I've met this charismatic Irish man. And he's laughing his head off. And he said, I love watching the news. I love your accent. And I thought, isn't that a nice thing to say? He lifted my spirits. And I came away from that conversation thinking, well, God bless him. That was decent of him to say it. So I no problem with the Irish accent over here at all. I mean, anyone that ever does say anything, I think it's based in jealousy, because as Ardal hit the nail on the head, I mean, it has been cool to be Irish for a very long time, because a lot of our high achievers in comedy, in TV, in sport, in business, you know, they're prominent people over here. And if you look at any sector, from soccer to horse racing to business and various different comedies and dramas, I mean, I've got a copy of the, my wife's a radio journalist, and she brought this in this evening. And look, James Nesbitt on the cover of Radio Times.
Yeah.
And, you know, Irish people are everywhere here.
No, and look, there's a lineage going back to Terry Wogan and beyond and all that kind of stuff.
Can I just jump in there, yeah. Joe? I think they see us as our kind of slightly wayward cousins. You know, they really do like us. And, you know, we sort of trade on that. I mean, we're guilty, I think, certainly in the entertainment industry of, and indeed in boardrooms and everywhere else, you know, Irish people get things done, they fix things. You know, they're the social secretaries in companies. You know, we're the monkey boys who make them laugh and dance as well to some degree. And we kind of play up on that a little bit. You know, we're kind of known, and I know this grates with me, and I'm sure it does with other people in the field, like we're known for our roguish charm, you know, and this sort of terminology, you know. So I think they have a very kind of it's a loving relationship ultimately.
Ardal mentioned post Brexit, and you know, I keep hearing nationalism is on the rise, whatever that means in day to day life. I'm not so sure. Have you sensed something like that, and if so, what tells you, for instance, that nationalism is on the rise?
Well, look, I think people need to understand Brexit was a victory for English nationalism, and I live here in Oxfordshire. It's a Conservative constituency. I'm outside Henley-on-Thames. The Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, used to be the MP round here. You still see him round. He has a property about 7 miles away. It's interesting what's happened. I mean, the whole Brexit debate, obviously, it happened. It's democracy, and the majority won, and Britain has now left the European Union. But I think what happened, for my money, what happened with Brexit, I think an awful lot of people now feel enabled, rightly or wrongly, to say what they think about where the country should be going. I mean, I had people say to me, are you worried? Oh, my mother-in-law said to me, believe it or not, oh, you should get a British passport in case they, you know, make it difficult for you or you have to go back. And I was thinking, you know, that's just not going to happen. So, you know, it opened a huge can of worms. Mm. But I've had people say to me, not that long ago, I had a man in his 70s in the street tell me that he doesn't watch me on the news anymore. And I said, why is that? And he said, this is England. And I was like, okay, right. Well, best of luck to you. You know, there are other news channels available. There are plenty of better reporters than me out there. But I felt, you know, this kind of entitlement, you know, people, everyone's got an opinion nowadays. And I know we're sharing opinions now on a radio program, but ultimately, I think social media has given absolutely everyone access to everyone. It used to be, you know, like what Ardal said years ago, if you went to the cinema and say, take an actor, for example, Russell Crowe, if you watched a film and you didn't like it or you felt it wasn't good value for money or you were bored, you went home, you told maybe two or three of your friends, oh, I went to the cinema last night, it was rubbish. Mm. Nowadays, people go instantly on social media, they find that actor and they tell him to his face. And I guess,
for sure, and that access is a big part of the problem. I guess what's interesting is I'm not as sure they would call him an Australian so-and-so, whereas it seems, looking at the McLean stuff, would you end up get you Irish so-and-so, or would you just be your crap reporter? I don't yes. like, you would get the Irish,
no,
the Irish
no,
would be thrown in.
No, it's very much
in.
Irish.
Right.
Yeah, and the worst I had in this country in 28 years was 2018, the World Cup in Russia. I was chosen to present and host and report our coverage of the World Cup in Russia. And I was out there for more than 5 weeks. And it was amazing. I mean, it was absolutely amazing. Every day you woke up, the Russian people were so friendly, so welcoming, different cities, different regions. We spent the day with Zlatan Ibrahimovic, which was just amazing. I mean, the guy is just a walking ego and one of the funniest people I've ever met. I mean, if he was to do stand-up, honestly, Ardal, he'd smash it.
Yeah, I read his book. And yet, his biography is brilliant.
He speaks in the third person. I mean, when you're talking to him, it's, you know, he's amazing. And then, yes, I was checking my social media every day, and it was quite obvious there was a lot of people out there did not like the fact that the English football team's journey at this World Cup was being covered by an Irish person. And I found that bizarre. I was like, I've never turned on Eurosport or BT Sport or Sky Sports or questioned, why is he doing that match? Why is she there? And yet this, and it was very pointed towards my Irishness.
Right.
But again, you know, I actually wrote an article, an open letter to the trolls, because I found it so funny that all these kind of big tough guys who would see themselves as far right English nationalists, not one of them did I meet anywhere in Russia. They were so scared. And so I wrote an article basically saying, you know, I am being paid to be at a World Cup to watch your team, and I'm on television every day. Thank you very much. You know, enjoy your World Cup from your sofa. But these people would never come up. I've only ever had it once. A woman came up to me in the street in Glasgow when Glasgow Rangers went into administration, and she gave me both barrels. And I remember thinking, I actually respected her. I thought, okay, that's your club and that's how you feel. But she felt that I was there gloating because I'm Irish, and she was guessing at my religion and she was guessing at my football allegiances. And I'm a Liverpool fan. And I was thinking, you're so far off the mark here, love, but, you know, God bless you. Head on home. And that's the worst to my face. But the stuff from the World Cup in Russia was pretty pointed. And I just found the irony in it being that these big tough guys, not one of them had gone to Russia to support their team because they were worried about getting seven shades knocked out of them by the Russian police if they kicked off.
Ardal, I mentioned earlier in the show, in 2012, like, this is just such an innocuous example, and the question I'm going to ask you is, how offended should we be, you know? So it was 2012, it's the one show, it's like tea time, BBC One, easy to like. Daily Thompson gets into hot water because they're showing people who've been Olympic torchbearers in the lead up to the Olympics, and they're all very proud, and one of them even got a tattoo to say Olympic torchbearer. And it turned out, you know, here's the funny part, they got the spelling wrong. And Daley Thompson gets in hot water because, as a reflexive joke, as opposed to considered opinion, he says, oh, it must have been an Irish person. Either he's talking about the person who got the tattoo or the tattoo artist. But the insinuation is clear. Dumb Paddy, a bit like my friend, you know, the Dumb Paddy thing. He gets in hot water. It's like, we're very sorry about this kind of a thing. It's a trope and it's a thing which is in the ether. That's why it was in his mind. I don't really blame him that much for it. I mean, does it ruin your day? Are you massively offended? Is it, how would you feel about that?
Yeah, it just would be water off a duck's back. I mean, it really wouldn't bother me.
Yeah.
I think it really bothered like the previous generation of Irish people, the people who went over there post-war, 50s, 60s, right up to the 70s. And maybe the 80s, you know, people who really did have to keep their heads down, who were very, like, you know, obviously discriminated against. And I think it did bother them a lot. And it was kind of interesting, like when we did Father Ted back in the 90s, you know, the only people who really objected to it at the very beginning were second generation Irish people in Britain. British people just loved it because it was a cool comedy, you know, and Irish people kind of, after a fairly slow uptake, began to, it really grew in them and they loved it. But the second generation Irish in London were, you know, they were the people who that sort of stuff really bothered, you know. They were put in their place on a daily basis, you know. But for us, like, I don't know whether it's education or confidence, you know, or what it is, like, but by the time the 90s came around, like, Irish people felt we could take on the world. And nothing like that would bother you. You know, it just wouldn't. Mm. Like, apart from anything else, you know, like, there's one thing I wouldn't entirely agree with James about. I know he's bringing up a really important issue. Is, like, while Irish people do have this kind of low-level sort of, I don't know if you could even call it discrimination, on, you know, it just isn't the same. You know, racism against sort of Black people and people of color, etc., is far more insidious. It's far more structural. You know, it's far more destructive. You know, and I think Irish people, and you know, I may be absolutely wrong about this, and I will, you know, be happily corrected. But you know, I think we can stand on our own two feet to a greater extent. Mm. We're more I think, you know, we're more, what's the word? And help me, sublimated or whatever, you know, we're more kind of.
I don't think we get half the abuse that the black community get.
No,
for example.
I think you're making the point as well. The system is far less rigged against Irish people than the black community.
Yeah. And you know, look at Marcus Rashford, a standout human being playing for Manchester United, playing for England, and feeding hungry, vulnerable children and making a government, tying a government up in knots, in U-turns and policy changes. And he's getting abused every single day. Yeah. And you just think, what's going on here? Because if he was a white guy playing cricket, he'd be a national saint.
Yeah, it's true. It's a fair point. And on the Poppy thing, I wanted to circle back to that. I'll get your thoughts, Enda, as well on this, because I know you probably have to make a decision as to wear it or to not. Ardal, you made you said the military is just such a part of everyday life, and the poppy has become such a big thing. You must have sensed that becoming more and more of an issue, and like less of a you don't have a choice in this matter anymore. Yeah, if you're going TV, you're wearing the poppy. Like, was it around Iraq War territory? Is that what really kicked it off, and it's continued ever since?
You're right. Yeah, absolutely. Like, I just remember as time went on, like, I would literally turn down shows in November. Rather than be forced to make up my mind about that issue, you know, 10 minutes before a TV appearance or something. So like going on a chat show or doing some stand-up on television or something like that, you know. You know, because like trying to explain, this is why James is so brave, you know, to take it on. And to take it on in such an unreasonable environment like Twitter, you know, it's not a place for reasoned debate. It's not a place for discussing the nuances of history, the complex history between Ireland and Britain over the last 800 years. It's just not the forum for it. Mm. And I would have it in, like, you know, where it would come up for me would be in those TV studios a few minutes before you go on, when some production assistant would come along and give you a choice of poppies. Do you want to wear one of the little lapel pins, or do you want to wear a big paper poppy or whatever?
They're your only two choices.
There are two choices, and so you know, there's obviously a couple of reasons why you might not want to, and you know, you don't need to be a rabid Republican to have these reservations. You know, you just need to have a cursory knowledge of Irish history to know that, well, you know, we just have a different view. Like we remember like Bloody Sunday. We remember the War of Independence. You know, we don't like the way this is not just respecting the heroes of World War One and World War Two, which I think we would all, you know, I don't think most people would have a problem with that. It's clearly so much greater than that. It's so much bigger than that. You know, it sort of touches on, it glorifies war, even though it professes not to, but it clearly does. I mean, there's a certain reveling in the history of empire and the history of military adventurism. And, you know, these are things that a lot of ordinary right-minded people, Irish or English or anyone, would prefer, you know, not to have to make those decisions.
And then I'd put it to you, you know, Ardal rightly says that Twitter isn't a place for nuanced debate. I mean, the point that McLean is making is not that complicated either. I mean, really, it's not that complicated. It's like, it's Bloody Sunday. It's look where I'm from. Look at the community I'm from. You have to understand the role that the army has had there. Like, that's not a 5,000-word thesis either. And yet, I mean, it garners no truck. It's not winning any kind of argument with anyone, it seems. Well, maybe certainly not the quotient going after McLean. Maybe it's easier to get it across in your world to somebody who works for Sky if you had an objection to wearing it. What's been your approach to it?
I just find it interesting that Nemanja Matic doesn't wear a poppy either.
Yeah.
He's Serbian.
Yeah, and he's explained it, and it seems to have gone away very quickly.
It's gone away quickly, but I think James McLean, I mean, you just know it's November when you pick up the Daily Mail and James McLean is in it, and you just think, oh, here we go again. And your heart sinks, because personally, I don't choose to wear one.
And has that been an issue?
No. In the early days, when I was starting out as a TV reporter over here, people, like Ardal said, you know, production assistants or a producer would come and say, oh, you haven't got your poppy on. And then your heart would sink a little bit, because I just think, this isn't me. And I see it. It's a very much a political gesture. I've nothing against any veterans or heroes or anything that has gone on, but I just personally don't want to wear one. And it's not me. It's not my tradition. And I'm very respectful and very grateful for all the opportunities that have come my way in the UK. Mm. But every November, you do kind of get the odd look from people and you think, well, you know, just please respect my decision, because we're all just trying to get along in life. And I can see exactly why James McLean has made the points he has made. I think he's spoken very movingly, very eloquently, and now he's paying the price that his family are being threatened with murder, basically. According to his wife, someone threatened to burn their house down. Mm. So, I mean, they're having a very tough time of it by all accounts, but no one has ever abused me for not wearing a poppy, but I will not be wearing one.
And for sections of the media, Ardal, every November, the James McLean story is just easy home run story. And look at the gazillion comments. Engagement is high. Clicks are high. Beautiful.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the one thing they're very sensitive about is their military. And you don't dare disrespect it in certain quarters of the British media, particularly, you know. And and I mean, with James as well, it's a bit different than for me in comedy, although comedy is, you know, pretty out there, and you know, there's a lot of give and take and a lot of banter. But in football, I mean, it is different. You know, you're going to get heaps of abuse anyway, no matter who you are and no matter what you stand for or stand against, you know. So so James, like, would be a target anyway, possibly. Mm. But he, I'm not saying he made himself a target, but by daring to question, you know, this version of history, or you know, or just to bring up this subject, even, would be enough to make it, like, far, far worse than the normal footballer gets.
Well, it was interesting. Kevin Kilbane said, you know, a lot of Irish players would rather not wear the poppy, but, and him included, but just sort of back to our don't want to create a fuss either kind of a thing.
Yeah, I mean, no, absolutely. But I mean, it's like, you know, he, you know, I support his decision to articulate this, because, you know, it is something that I've wrestled with time and time again. I've never worn one, nor would I. I wouldn't be able to face my family at home if I ever wore one, you know. And it's not that they're firebrands or anything. It's just, it's got nothing to do with us whatsoever. Like, so, yeah. I mean, there's no symbol in Ireland I could think I'd even wear. Do you know what I mean? There's nothing I would wear. Yeah, I wouldn't even, you know, wear like a fauna or a shamrock. I mean, I don't wear stuff. You know, I don't wear jewelry. It's got nothing whatsoever to do with us. You know, you know, it's just tragic that it became such an issue and that it has such legs, and that James is at the center of it all, the center of this storm every year. I mean, it's just, and I don't know what the solution is. I mean, you know, no one is going to hear this debate in the UK, probably. You know, no one wants to hear this debate. It's got, because, you know, they're not really interested in our take on it. You know, why would they be?
Yeah. Well, on that note, it's time to wrap. And I should say, James McLean is going to be on our morning show tomorrow, so it'll be great to hear from him. And that's coming your way at 9 tomorrow morning on OTB AM, if you want to tune in for that. But can I offer sincerest thanks to Enda Brady of Sky News. Enda, thanks so much. And Ardal O'Hanlon, great to have you on. Great to hear from you as well, Ardal. Much appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thanks, man, Joe.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.